This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. On February 4th, 1968, at the Ebenezer Baptist Church, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered a sermon called The Drum Major Instinct. Everybody can be great, he said, because everybody can serve. King was committed to service and envisioned communities and a country where everyone is taken care of. And his vision has spanned generations. As we continue to look back at his life and legacy on this Martin Luther King Day, we're joined by Alex Sierra, the youngest trustee serving on the Peoria Park District Board of Trustees. Alex, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you have helped, your age, 22, you've helped lead a protest in Champaign, Urbana after the murder of George Floyd. You worked in the office of Congresswoman Sherry Bustos and worked on the campaign of a first district city council member, Denise Jackson, a winning campaign, I should say. Dr. King started his work at a young age. Can you talk about how his legacy, do you feel it echoing or coming out in your own life and work?
Without a doubt, without Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., a lot of the work that I have done, as well as other members of the Black community, Black and Brown communities, it would not be possible, to be honest. When I think of Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy, one of the most popular mottos and quotes that I can recall is, if you cannot fly, then you run. If you cannot run, then you walk. If you cannot walk, then you crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward. And I truly believe that that still reigns true to this day.
I heard a radio story a few years ago about, I think it was at the Lincoln Memorial. It was maybe a junior high class. I might have some of the details wrong. But their teacher was playing the famous speech from the March on Washington, right? I Have a Dream. And the kids were just kind of rolling their eyes. They weren't really moved by the occasion because they had been inundated with so much King imagery and quotes and everything in their lives to that point. I wonder if that's an experience you had, and maybe you had to sort of rediscover him as you've aged.
Well, speaking for myself personally, I've never doubted the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. My family instilled in me very early core beliefs of civic work and just giving back to my community. And that is exactly what Dr. King embodied. I do think that to that point, the civil rights era legacy has been undermined and unfinished. But in many ways, we have to realize that we have to regain that movement and that traction in order to overcome what modern day slavery and modern day lynching has become to.
You talked about an ethos being instilled by your family. I understand your grandfather, Savino Sierra, was involved in the Peoria community and used to take you with him to city council meetings. Can you talk about how that influenced you to take a role in your community today?
My grandfather has been my Northern Star and my family's Northern Star. I'm a second generation American on top of also being a Black man as well, and without the work that my grandfather had done, I probably would not have the same love and passion that I have for my community at this day and time. He went to every city council meeting, every board of education meeting, county board meeting, police commission, you name it. And oftentimes, I'm like, Grandpa, why am I here? because as any kid would think, that isn't my first intention to go. And ultimately, my grandfather had taught me what it meant to love and care for people outside of yourself. We had several rules growing up. You go to school, get a job, and you take care of other people. And if you violated any of those, then you had a problem.
Taking care of other people, it's part of what Dr. King envisioned, right? He had this idea of a beloved community where everyone is cared for, free from poverty, hunger, and hate. You attended the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. You worked on a Senate campaign in Kentucky. Why was it important for you to go back to Peoria, to your community there?
Well, when my grandfather had started transitioning, when he started passing, it was very difficult for me. First and foremost, during that time, I had contracted COVID and I had to isolate from my family. So it was very hard to be away from my family when we have such a tight circle. And ultimately, the work that I have been able to do prior to returning to Peoria, I learned so much. And I was like, wow, this is an opportunity to come back and really lay some groundwork in my city, which is ultimately why I had identified now Councilwoman-elect Denise Jackson and worked as her political strategist.
You know, so many young people who get engaged by politics are drawn to the national fights and the national, you know, concepts, and they want to go to D.C. and work there. I think it's, you don't see as many young people feeling like, oh, I'm going to look at my community. Do you get that sense as well? And what would you say to people who, you know, why engage in your community as opposed to working on, you know, what's happening in D.C.?
Yeah. Well, you know, fortunately, I've had the opportunity to work on national, state, and local campaigns and the political offices. And I think I get why, you know, national politics is such a popular avenue for a lot of young people. You know, it's such adrenaline pushing, you know. So I understand, you know, ultimately, I had come to learn that a lot of the needle pushing and a lot of the movement and action happens on a local level. I'm not a fan of stagnation, and I personally just don't get involved if I feel like we're not having some momentum toward action. So that's ultimately why I decided to really focus on a local level of civic engagement and political work.
On the local level, what are your ideas for how we can build this vision that Dr. King, that we talked about earlier, of this beloved community?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the vision on a local level for me is redefining what it means to be an active citizen, as well as redefining what it means to have a home. You know, a lot of people, especially people of color, have divided homes based on the need to work several jobs, to take care of their children, to take care of their elders. And this is an opportunity to really just help cultivate those best practices of being a very healthy family.
In an article in the Journal Star, you talked about sort of backing away from the idea of being a politician. Can you talk about that? I mean, there is that, you know, that line, activist, politician, sometimes they don't get along so well.
You want to know what? It's funny. I thought this would come up. But, you know, growing up, I was just oftentimes exposed to just negative perceptions of what it meant to be a politician. And as I had developed my own opinions and been exposed to my own experiences, I realized that there is a difference in politics and public service, you know? So that's what I ultimately see myself as, and I will continue to be as long as I'm involved in political work, as a public servant. I don't think that, you know, I just don't think that frame of what a politician is, I don't think that I'm only included in that box. I do have political characteristics. It's work that I love to do, you know, but that doesn't define me as a person.
Well, keeping in mind this is Martin Luther King Day, what do you think, this is a question I've asked a number of public officials at all different levels in Illinois in the past year or so, what is the purpose of politics?
The purpose of politics is to put people first, and that's without a doubt. And if you heard how fast I responded to that, it's because people need to be the priority, you know. Also, in terms of politics, and governance in general, is to make sure that we are not leaving minority populations behind. You know, politics and governance is all about opportunity, and that's to ensure that you know, everyone has their piece of the pie.
Alex Sierra is a member of the Peoria Park District Board of Trustees. Thank you so much for being with us on the 21st.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and my next guest is writer and political consultant Don Rose. Back in 1963, he was an organizer for Midwest States at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. He's made plenty of other marks in Chicago politics, leading school boycotts, managing the anti-machine campaign that elected Jane Byrne, the city's first woman mayor. But today we want to talk with him mostly about 1966, when Martin Luther King brought his civil rights work to Chicago and Rose worked as his press secretary. Don Rose, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for asking.
Let's begin with the Chicago Freedom Campaign. I understand King was considering a number of northern cities, right? Cleveland, Detroit, Harlem. Why did he ultimately choose Chicago?
Well, I think he found that Chicago had the best organized civil rights coalition. We had at that time a group called the Coordinated Council of Community Organizations, the CCCO, which included at that time 30-35 groups that ranged from the traditional civil rights organizations to the modern ones, the SNCC, Chicago CORE, as well as many neighborhood organizations and religious-based organizations in Chicago. And we were the one that had sponsored school boycotts, had organized for the March on Washington, as you mentioned there. And we put on a four-day, a little epic for Dr. King when he came to evaluate Chicago. We took him into every black neighborhood in Chicago, into the suburbs, spoke to all kinds of groups. And he just found that we were the best organized. Harlem, which is where Andrew Young first thought they would wind up, turned out that the groups there were fighting each other more than they were fighting the man.
Interesting. And this was part of a broader movement to take the civil rights campaign out of the South into the North. Can you talk about that aspect of what he was trying to do?
Well, exactly. There had been, much discussion in those days between de facto and de jure segregation. De jure segregation, meaning by law, and de facto segregation, which was denounced by President John Kennedy, was just as pernicious and just as effective in its own way when run by people like Richard J. Daley. And they wanted to break the concept of de facto segregation, which was just using government as Daley did to maintain segregation.
How did you come to work with King? You said you were part of this sort of presentation, this epic presentation, you said.
I was the press liaison for the CCCO. Started working with different people in 1962, and some of these major events took place in 63, 64. And in the middle of 65 was when we put on this show in the summer of 65, and Dr. King decided to come with us. And what his practice with the SCLC, his own organization, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, was to merge with the local group, whether it was the Mississippi Freedom Movement or the Atlanta Freedom Movement or whatever. So he merged the SCLC with the local group, which was led at that time by Al Raby, the late Al Raby. That became the Chicago Freedom Movement, and perforce, I moved up to be the local PR person, press secretary, whatever you want to call it, for Dr. King, his main media person relating to Chicago. He did have a national press secretary, a guy named Junius Griffin, but I sort of just moved into that role, and when we were educating Dr. King about Chicago and a long weekend, I had to talk to him about the Chicago press and Chicago politics, which was my area of expertise there. There were people on housing, people on health care, et cetera, et cetera.
And I understand he was ultimately somewhat confounded by the reaction of the political establishment in Chicago. I want to come back to that a little later, but King, when he comes to Chicago, he ends up moving into a rundown apartment on the West Side. I understand you visited him there. Can you talk about why he decided to do that and what it was like, what you remember about it?
Well, he wanted to become as much as he could a part of Chicago, so he was not some guy from out of town telling people what to do or how they were going to get free. And he wanted to immerse himself in, if not the very worst of Chicago, at least the life of the ordinary black person in the city. And we picked out this apartment on the West Side, which was not a total slum, but certainly an example of kind of rundown circumstances that many, many, many people had to live in Chicago.
And do you remember anything about, you know, what it looked like? I mean, you said it wasn't a totally rundown place. I mean, I don't know if the...
No, it was very shop-worn. Actually, the owner, when he found out King was moving in, gave it a paint job and so on. It was a very standard two-bedroom Chicago apartment with a hallway, nothing that would distinguish it from thousands of others around the rest of the city, except age and neglect.
Yeah, I guess it's probably not good for business if Martin Luther King is moving in to illustrate the plight of, you know, sort of slum areas of the city into your apartment building. All right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break on the show. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Don Rose. He's a writer and political consultant who was press secretary for Dr. Martin Luther King in 1966 during the Chicago Freedom Campaign. More to come on the 21st in just a moment. Stay with us.